You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Universal Spirituality and Human Physicality, Bridging the Divide. Collected Works, Volume 202, translated by Matthew Barton. This is Lecture 15, given in Dornach on Christmas Day, the 25th of December, 1920. When we try to understand the event of Golgotha in terms of the Christmas mystery, we can look in two different directions, toward the starry heavens, on the one hand, with all their secrets, and toward our human inwardness, on the other, with all of its secrets, too. In the last few days, I have spoken of how the Magi from the Orient discerned in the starry heavens the arrival of Christ Jesus on earth, and how the poor shepherds in the fields received, as in visions drawn from their inward experience, the annunciation of this Savior of humanity. Today let us turn our thoughts to these two directions, from which, basically, we gain all knowledge that we have, including, therefore, our highest knowledge of the real meaning of life on earth. The human soul had a quite different relationship to the universe and to itself in times preceding the mystery of Golgotha than it did following this. Ordinary historical studies do not highlight this, since ancient forms of knowledge primarily belong to millennia long preceding the mystery of Golgotha. As the mystery of Golgotha approached, such forms of knowledge had grown much more dilute, and only certain, especially chosen individuals, such as the three Magi, still had such far-reaching insights. Likewise, only specially privileged, yet also otherwise ordinary people, such as the shepherds, were receptive inwardly, and thus able to access visions in their sleep, as the shepherds could. These kinds of knowledge were the legacies of humankind's ancient connection with and knowledge of the universe, both in the case of the Magi and that of the shepherds. Nor is it yet universally true, especially in our current era, that we can find clearly expressed in humanity as a whole the mode of cognition that has entered human evolution since the mystery of Golgotha. Yet basically what I am going to say tonight holds true. People's relationship to the starry heavens in pre-Christian times was such that they did not see the stars in the merely prosaic or abstract way we generally do today. In speaking of the stars as living beings and intelligences, people were not fabricating mere poetic fancies, as a very imperfect science considers, but their vision came instead from a spiritual, albeit atavistic perception of the heavens. In ancient times, people saw the starry heavens not as points or areas of light, but they perceived spiritual presences there, which they named as the constellations, and experienced the planets of our solar system as ensouled by living entities. Spirit was perceived in the broad realms of the heavens. These ancient people similarly saw a spirit indwelling everything that relates to the plant and mineral realm. These three realms of existence, the starry heavens and the mineral and plant kingdoms, were something they saw with a single capacity of perception. Thus they spoke of the stars as ensouled beings, and did so also when speaking of minerals and plants. It would be wrong to think that people's mode of perception and insight in these ancient times was the same as ours today. A little while back I described to you a stage of perception and cognition that is not so very different from our own, but which many people today find difficult to imagine. I said that in their earliest civilization, the Greeks had no perception at all of the color blue, and therefore had no experience of having the blue sky above them. Their color experience, by contrast, tended more toward the active side of the color circle, toward red and yellow. Nor did they use shades of blue in painting. This area of color only arose later in human perception. Try to picture all shades of blue vanishing from the world, so that green, too, appears different from how it does to us today. And you will then understand that the Greeks saw the world around them differently from us. For people of more ancient times, the surrounding world appeared still more different. The spirit gradually receded from the world the ancients surveyed. It withdrew from the world of stars, from mineral and plant realms. And as it did so, the living, active colors grew duller. Out of the depths arose, by contrast, what gave rise to a blue sensation. And as the capacity to perceive blue, the darker colors, increasingly developed in humanity, what the ancients experienced in their vibrant, and if you like, active, color-rich astrology, transformed into a gray, colorless geometry and mechanics. Today, in drawing this geometry and mechanics out of us, we no longer see the secrets of the starry worlds in our outer surroundings. Ancient astrology transformed into the world as we picture it today, and as elaborated by Copernicus, Galileo, and Kepler, into a world of heavenly mechanics, the world of mathematics. The other side of the same coin is that in ancient times, people possessed an intensive inner capacity to perceive what streamed out of the earth and around human beings, a kind of earthly fluidum, in a sense as the counterpart to the starry heavens, an inner faculty of perception, certain inner capacities, made it possible for people to be aware of the earth's fluids, the earth's qualities. People of ancient times possessed a subtle sensitivity to all the distinctive characteristics of their country's climate, all the properties of its soil. To live on limestone as opposed to granite gave people a different experience, a sense of what was streaming up there from the earth. But this experience of an upstreaming quality was not just confined to obscure feelings, a dull awareness, but it arose in people as colors, clouds in which they actually inwardly dwelt. And just as they experienced the depths of the earth in this way, so they also sensed the qualities of soul in their fellow human beings and the qualities of animal life. These feelings were vibrant and resonant. Thus, in a kind of external capacity of perception, human beings gazed out into the starry heavens and surveyed the spiritual qualities of minerals and plants with atavistic, instinctive clairvoyance and an instinctive inner vision. They also perceived, they also perceived what lived spiritually in the earth's depths. They did not merely speak of limestone, but certain elemental beings rose up in them instead, and these were of different kinds, depending on whether the people concerned lived on chalk, granite, or gneiss. They also experienced the qualities of auras in other human beings, though these were in a sense clothed or robed by earth. They experienced the auras of animals too, as being especially clothed and covered, thus seeing animals as earth beings. What lived in the earth as its soil and ground, as the inner warmth of earth, was seen to work on throughout the whole kingdom of animals. When a person of ancient times saw butterflies fluttering over plants, he always also saw them pulling after them, as it were, a quality that arose out of the earth. As if in an aura cloud, he perceived the animal life scurrying and scampering over the earth. All such perceptions gradually receded, leaving a more prosaic world behind, one that transferred outward into external reality, so that people began to see their surroundings more as we do now, without perceiving the spirit at work in it. What people perceived in inner vision transformed into our modern perception of nature, while the outward spiritual perceptions they had likewise transformed into modern mathematics and mechanics. We have developed our modern perception of the external natural world from what the poor shepherds in the fields brought to bear in their inner vision. And on the other hand, we have elaborated our dry mathematics and mechanics from what the magi from the Orient brought to bear on their outward perception of starry worlds, of the star which announced the coming of Christ. At the time this occurred, certain individuals still retained the powers of outward and inward vision, which enabled the birth mystery of Jesus to be proclaimed to them in this way. But what were these capacities of perception rooted in? Now, in the period we pass through, between death and a new birth, which we have therefore passed through before we entered earthly existence at birth, we actually experience universal breaths. During this time, our individuality was not tied in the same way to the portion of space enclosed by our skin, but instead lived an existence unfurled across cosmic breadths of space. And the ancient capacity of perception, which the wise kings from the Orient still demonstrated, was largely one which emanated very strongly from the period between death and new birth, and thus it was a pre-birth capacity. What the soul experienced before birth in the world of stars was reawoken to become a special faculty in those who became pupils of the Magi. In developing these special faculties, the pupils of the Magi came to awareness that before they descended into this earthly world, they had undergone particular experiences with Mercury, Sun, Moon, Saturn, Jupiter. They drew on this surfacing memory of the cosmos in order to perceive the spirit everywhere in their outer surroundings, to see human destiny on earth in their perceptions of the starry world that arose through memory of their pre-birth existence. By contrast, the capacities by means of which people perceived the depths of the earth, the secrets of human souls, or the nature of animals, were ones only germinally developed in people, and only surfaced properly after death. Thus these were post-death faculties, which only came to creative activity after death, young, germinal abilities. Such capacities that only become fully creatively active after death do nevertheless appear during earthly life as germinal powers, and do so most especially in the early phase of earthly life, in childhood. The growth forces which the growing child possesses to a special degree, which burgeon from a realm of spirit, in fact, tend to recede and withdraw in later years, giving way instead to the powers present in us before birth, which then assume greater scope in us. After death, though, these more childlike powers surface again. Only especially gifted people retain them into advanced old age. I have mentioned before that we owe any powers of brilliance or genius we have in later years to the fact that we have remained more childlike than others who do not possess this capacity, or possess it to a lesser extent. The preservation of childlike capacities into ripe old age equips us with special powers of creative invention. However mature we become, the more we can preserve our childlike faculties, the more creative we will be. And after death, these creative powers surface again very distinctly. Certain peoples in pre-Christian times were able to draw on powers they retained from pre-birth existence to make their post-death powers fruitful. By leaving more undeveloped the cognitive powers acquired particularly by the Oriental Magi, allowing such knowledge to recede and instead accentuating post-death faculties, so that these two types of knowledge interpenetrated and enabled pre-birth powers to fructify or enliven post-death powers. Such people developed a gift of prophecy, the gift of predicting the future by drawing on post-death faculties. The Hebrew prophets were people who developed such post-death powers to a special degree. These capacities did not remain merely instinctive, as in the poor shepherds, but were penetrated by the faculties more intensely developed in those such as the Oriental Magi, leading to very particular forms of insight that also relate to the secrets of the starry heavens and processes at work there. You will find it understandable that the annunciation to the shepherds in the fields was inevitably in accord with the knowledge of the Magi from the Orient, whose insights enabled them to have vision of the deep secrets of the stars. Drawing on the worlds where we dwell between death and a new birth, on the capacities arising there that they used to penetrate the secrets of the heavens, they were able to develop an enhanced insight that showed them a being, the Christ, embarking from that world we dwell in between death and birth, a world which does not belong as such to our life on earth, and descending to this earth. Thus the Magi perceived Christ's approach through their knowledge of the stars. And what surfaced in the shepherds in the fields, with their particular ability to feel the qualities of the earth's depths? You see, the earth became somewhat different in nature as Christ approached. The earth sensed this approach of Christ. The earth bore within it new powers arising from the fact that Christ was approaching. And the shepherds in the fields, in their deep piety, felt what was reflected of this in the earth, the way earth responded to Christ's approach. They felt what arose from its depths. Thus the breadths of space proclaimed Christ's arrival to the Magi from the Orient on the one hand, while the depths of earth proclaimed the same thing to the shepherds on the other. This was an era when vestiges still remained of those ancient modes of knowledge. The three Magi from the Orient and the shepherds in the field were in this sense exceptions to the prevailing trend. In their own way, both had retained what had otherwise mostly faded for the general run of humanity, and therefore they could discern the approaching mystery of Golgotha in the form this was proclaimed to them. In these things we must certainly draw on spiritual scientific insights to enhance ordinary historical perspectives, trying, in a sense, to encompass breadths of space and depths of soul. By encompassing breadths of space in the right way, from a certain perspective, we can learn to grasp how the Magi from the Orient experienced the approach of the mystery of Golgotha. If we seek to fathom depths of soul, we can gain insight into how something was proclaimed to the shepherds by coming so close to the earth that the earth itself hearkened to these approaching powers. The pre-birth faculties that came to expression in the Magi correspond to a more intellectual mode of apprehension, a cognitive capacity, although in those times the intellect was something different from today. What worked in the shepherds, on the other hand, corresponds more to the will, which at the same time embodies powers of growth in the universe. And thus the shepherds were deeply connected in their will to the Christ being approaching the earth. We can also sense that tales about the Magi from the Orient, although biblical accounts are very imperfect renderings, convey the mode of cognition in which these Magi approached the mystery of Golgotha, which lives for them in their external awareness. And in the inward intimate account in the Gospel of the proclamation to the shepherds, we can feel that an appeal is being made to the human will, to the soul and sensibility, to an inner emotional quality. Quote, divine revelation from the heavens and peace to men on earth of goodwill." We feel the streaming of will in the proclamation to the shepherds. And in sensing the light-filled quality of Magi knowledge, we can also feel how different its nature is. And so, if we seek to look deeply into human cognition and human will, in the pre-birth realm on the one hand and the post-death realm on the other, we can come closer to the profound significance of the New Testament stories that convey the quality of Magi knowledge and that of the proclamation to the shepherds. And there's a chart on the left reading down starry heavens, mineral world, plant world, and underneath that, pre-birth capacities, intellect. And then there's an arrow pointing to the right, and reading the right side down, it goes depths of earth, human soul, animal life. Underneath this, post-death capacities, will. As I have said, the living world of spirit, people experienced in ancient times in the starry heavens and in the mineral and plant kingdoms, has become our mathematics and mechanics. And what was once inner knowledge and experience has shifted to the surface of things. Picturing the nature of the human being with his inner knowledge in olden times and the outward knowledge of the Magi, we find that the external knowledge of the Magi reaches outward to breadths of space to perceive the spirit, while the inner knowledge of former times leads equally to spiritual vision, but one which perceives the depths of earth. The inner knowledge which the shepherds possessed, see drawing, becomes increasingly externalized as humanity evolves, and becomes our modern external sense perception, what we call experiential perception. And the Magi's knowledge of the living and souled world of stars withdraws inward during the same evolution, or rather back toward the brain, becoming our mathematical and mechanical apprehension. In other words, a kind of crossover has occurred. The inner knowledge of pre-Christian eras was pictorial, naive, instinctive imagination, and this has transformed into our outward sensory perception, while the external knowledge of former times, which was used to encompass the world of stars, shifts inward and becomes the dry, geometrical, mathematical, mechanical mode of understanding which we draw from within us. See plate 13. In modern times, inner illumination reveals to us nothing other than mathematical and mechanical realities. And only specially gifted minds, such as Novalis, take wing and ascend to a state where they feel and give poetic form to the inner life of mathematics and mechanics. Novalis did this beautifully, rising to the harmonies of poetic song. And what he celebrates here is, for ordinary mortals, the triangle, the square, the dry world of square roots, sums, and differentials. It is the world of mathematical statements, such as the sum of two forces expressed in a parallelogram. Most people are prosaic enough to feel this world as a rather dry and neutral one, whereas Novalis celebrates it because he can still feel there something of the echo of a former world of experience, before it had withdrawn entirely into the inner intellect. Then it was still the world in which people could read inscriptions of the spirit of Jupiter, Saturn, of Aries, or Gemini. This was an ancient, light-filled world of stars, which gradually receded inward. And now, still at the first stage of its withdrawal, composes the apparently dry world of mechanics and mathematics. And the capacity intensified in a different way in the shepherds into clairaudience, into attunement to the voice of the angel in the heights, has been weakened in us, has become dry and neutral perception of the outer sensory world. This serves us today to apprehend minerals, plants, and stars, whereas, with the other scarcely expressed capacity, we perceive the depths of the earth or the world of humans and animals. But what today has been diluted into our experience of the world of mathematics, mechanics, and astronomy was once astrology. And in ancient knowledge, had such potency that the Magi could use it to perceive the heavenly being of Christ. And the deep influence upon the earth, the whole power and potency with which Christ was to work within the earth, was something proclaimed to the shepherds in the fields, but in a way that did not appeal to what has become our ordinary sensory perception, which shows us only that the grass is green or an animal's skin is brown. This was instead still an interior mode of knowledge, which had not yet been externalized into mere perception of sight or touch. It told the shepherds instead what Christ was to become for the earth. We have to find our way back again to intensify our inner dry experience of mathematics into the vivid capacity of imagination, learning to grasp this imaginative faculty which initiation science offers. What do such imaginations contain? They continue and further the faculty by which the Magi from the Orient perceived Christ's approach. Imaginations are the offspring, the descendants of what ancient people saw in the constellations, in the starry imaginations, in imaginations of the mineral realm, of gold, silver, copper. In ancient times, people had imaginative visions of this kind, and all this has come down to us as mathematical capacities. Mathematical perceptions are today becoming the capacities whereby we understand imaginations, and our understanding of the being of Christ must be sought by developing inner experience in this way. At the same time, external perception must also be deepened. External sensory perception has likewise come down to us from what was once inner experience of an instinctive kind. The power that existed in the shepherds, in the inner annunciation they heard in their hearts, has become merely outward vision and touch. It has shifted entirely outward into our external experience, so that we perceive only outward things, the tapestry of the sensory world. But this must continue its journey outward. We must become capable of leaving the body and developing the capacity for inspiration. And then this inspiration, the form of external perception we need to develop today through initiation science, will give us what the naive inner perception of the shepherds once gave them in angelic annunciation. When capacities of imagination and inspiration acquired by the science of initiation work together, as the astrology of the Magi and heart vision in the shepherds once did, we will raise ourselves again to a spiritual grasp of the living Christ. We need to comprehend how Isis, the living divine Sophia, had to be lost from sight as our capacities evolved to transform astrology into mathematics, geometry, and mechanics. Likewise, we can comprehend that Isis, the new Isis, the divine Sophia, will be found again when these dead disciplines of mathematics, astronomy, and geometry are reawoken as living imagination, and that this is essential if the power of Christ within us, since the mystery of Golgotha, is to permeate and pervade us in a fully living, or in other words, light-filled way. This turning point is approaching. The external earth will no longer provide the bounties which humankind has become accustomed to demanding in modern times. The great conflicts, the dire catastrophes of recent years, have already made large areas of the earth into cultural ruins. Further conflicts will follow. Human beings are already preparing the next large-scale world war, and civilization will continue to be laid waste. Things previously of greatest worth for modern mankind's advancing knowledge and activity will no longer have anything to offer us directly. Outward earth existence, insofar as it is a product of former times, will go under. And anyone who thinks they can perpetuate old habits of thinking and will is hoping in vain. A new form of knowledge is needed, and a new kind of will in all fields. As we come to acknowledge the passing of a certain culture and civilization, We must at the same time learn to look into the human heart and the spirit indwelling us. We must trust in this human heart and this human spirit that indwell us, so that as an old civilization crumbles and falls into ruins, we can do everything possible to give rise to a new civilization, new structures and forms, really new ones. No such new forms will develop unless we give really serious consideration to what humanity needs. Read my book titled Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, where I describe how, if we are to achieve higher knowledge, we must first gain understanding of what is called the encounter with the guardian of the threshold. As I point out there, this encounter means that our will, feeling, and thinking separate in a certain way, that a trinity has to arise from the chaotic unity normally existing in people. Pupils of spiritual science need an understanding of this guardian of the threshold. But above and beyond this, all modern humanity must come to see it as a part of the further development of civilization. Even if humanity in general is not consciously aware of this, people's inner experiences will pass through a realm that can also be called that of the guardian of the threshold. Modern humanity is crossing a threshold where an important guardian stands, an earnest guardian. This grave guardian tells us, above all, that we must not cling to growths that have seeded themselves from olden times. The guardian says, quote, "Look into your hearts, look into your souls, and ensure you can create new forms. You can only do so if you have faith that powers of perception and powers of will can flow from the world of spirit into this spiritual creation of new forms." Close quote. Contemporary humanity is passing more or less unconsciously through experiences that are especially intense for particular individuals as they embark on paths of higher knowledge. Those who have come together as an anthroposophical community should realize that one of the most essential things in our present times is to help people understand this passage through the threshold realm. Just as an individual seeker needs to understand that his thinking, feeling, and will must become distinct from each other, so modern humanity in general must be helped to see that the three areas of society, of cultural life, rights life, or the state, and economic life, must become separate and distinct from each other, and a higher bond be created than the state has been. The need for this threefold social organism cannot be asserted by means of programs, ideas, or ideologies proposed by isolated individuals. Rather, deep insight into humanity's further evolution can show us that our evolution has reached a point of transition, a threshold, that the grave guardian stands there, and in the same way that he asks an individual who wishes to attain higher knowledge to suffer the separation of thinking, feeling, and will, he also asks all humanity to distinguish and sunder what has so far been chaotically intermeshed in the idolized state. He tells us that we must detach the different strands of this unshaped unity into a cultural and spiritual sphere, a rights and administrative sphere, and an economic sphere. Otherwise, humanity will not progress but burst asunder. The old chaos will collapse. But in collapsing, it will not find the form necessary for humanity, instead assuming an Ahrimanic or Luciferic form rather than the form which corresponds to Christ. And this latter alone, drawn from spiritual science, can give the knowledge needed to navigate the threshold crossing in our time. If we understand anthroposophy properly, this is something vital to bring to mind now at Christmas. The babe lying in the crib must embody the infancy of spiritual evolution toward our human future. As the shepherds in the fields set out to find the Christ child after the angel's annunciation, and as the magi from the Orient likewise set out on their journey to seek what had appeared in infant form to advance the human world, So our modern world must set out on the journey of initiation science to perceive in the form of the Christ child the shape of things to come in society, the threefold social organism sustained by the science of the Spirit. The old form of the state will burst asunder if human beings do not learn to structure it and distinguish its different aspects. It will burst asunder, developing a spiritual aspect on the one hand, quite naturally, yet one that would be very chaotic, assuming entirely Ahrimanic and Luciferic attributes. And on the other hand, an economic domain would come about, again with Ahrimanic and Luciferic features. Each of these would draw to itself the remaining shreds of the state. In the Orient, if human beings cannot grasp how to avoid this by permeating themselves fully with Christ, nations will tend to become Ahrimanic and Luciferic, quote, cultural states, close quote, while in the West they will tend to become, quote, economic states, close quote, again with Ahrimanic and Luciferic attributes. This can only be avoided if we can set about creating a threefold structure drawn from true insight and will. Such human will and insight will be fully pervaded by Christ, and this will come to expression in no other way than by sundering the old idol of the unified state into its appropriate three aspects. Those who truly stand within cultural and spiritual life will then immediately perceive and acknowledge the shepherd in the fields and what the earth experiences through the Christ being. And those who truly stand within economic life, in economic associations, will properly develop a will that brings with it a Christianized social order. The end of Lecture 15.